Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Evan.
Hello.
All right, Dev, what do you got for us today?
I don't have a traditional quote, but I have... it was a video I watched, which I liked, but it's like too long to just directly quote. So I want you to picture an old man holding an hourglass. He's got a pencil, and he's talking about the hourglass, and he's pointing to the middle of the hourglass where the sand goes through. It's kind of... I wouldn't say hokey, right? We all think of time as the hourglass. Mm-hmm. But he says, if you're concentrating on everything that's gone and already fallen down into the bottom, there's no use, because the only thing we have control over is that tiny little middle bit. And that's kind of, right, we've all kind of heard that, but I liked the imagery of him pointing to it, because he's saying, see this really fast moving thin stream.
Right.
That's all you have control over. And right. Let's say you decide something, or you make some issue or some bad decision, but the second it's over, it falls away.
Right.
So you focusing on the stuff that is left past you, that time has already passed. It's already in the past. There's no point in it. And then everything above you, that's also coming down through, but that can end. And I think my imagery is someone with a hammer can just smash it, and it can be done at any time. So you think you have everything up there waiting. The only thing you have control of is that tiny little bit in the middle. So what are you doing with those few grains flying past?
Right.
I think it was like, it's some inspirational thing on Instagram, but I kind of like, it was like an old dude, and it's probably like a video from like the 60s. I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And he just kept pointing to that middle bit. And for some reason, the last couple weeks, that stuck in my head, him pointing to that little tiny bit.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I also like the idea of that imagery of this little point in time that we have control of.
Mm-hmm.
The small things that we're doing right this second. And that's the only thing that matters in your life at that time. Now you have this, like, you have the whole bottom half of the hourglass, which is everything that's already happened. Right. And you have responsibility over that stuff because it has come past you, but there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And then you have all this, like, potential, which is what's up above you of what can happen. But you can only really control what you're doing at that moment, and what's the most important thing at that moment.
Exactly. Like, what is above you is not guaranteed. What's below you is already passed. So you can either stack on top of it good decisions, or continue to let the sand fall down into a pit of crappy sandy ideas.
Right, exactly. Now, maybe a whole pit of crappy sandy ideas with one really good idea is not a bad thing, but that being said, you know, like, you hope that your legacy, which is at the bottom half of that that hourglass, is something that you're proud of, right? Things that you've done. Now, obviously, that's not, you know, ideas that you never saw through, right? That's not something that's down there. It's what actually came past you, what you actually did.
Right.
Right. So I think, yeah, exactly. When your hourglass gets smashed or turned on its side and stopped, you know, what are you going to have on the bottom half that's, like, important? But again, it's only like what's passing by you at the time. What,
I think,
you know, the life around you that you can control.
I think the video, he must have been talking to people who went to one of those seminars that had issues already. You know, he's like, down there's bankruptcy, down there's this, down there's that. Like, yes, there were bad choices, but they're past you now. And the only thing you can focus on is that tiny little bit. Obviously, your future, you can hope for what's above you coming down, but you got to make best because the present is the present, but it quickly becomes the past.
Yeah. Yeah, that I mean, it also just kind of makes me think about, you know, the taking advantage of what you have in this moment. You know, a lot of people think about what their future is going to be like and all that sand that's above them, you know, what you can do to get there. And obviously that's important to try to think about, but you only can really, you know, live in the moment and appreciate what you have in the moment to the best of your ability. It also reminds me, I heard a story recently of a 13-year-old who committed suicide. And the person was just like kind of reflecting on it and saying how, you know, people who are able to ask for help and put people into positions where they can get help, you know, you should be able to take advantage of that if you can and just ask for help, because if you don't ask, like, you never know what's going to happen. But then it also, he said, like, everyone go hug the people you love. You know, tell them that you love them. Like, hug them, like, long, like an awkward hug where you, like, really make sure they know, you know, that you love them, because you never know when that is really going to make an effect on somebody, you know, to know that someone loves them, so.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, and there's I won't go into it, but there's been some family health issues, and just as you're going through that stuff, we've all been there.
Yep.
All of a sudden that came flashing up in my head.
Yeah, right.
Like that little tiny bit. You're like, "Oh man, I got to focus on what's right now."
Right.
And we got to make sure, and then it does seem fast. Then it seems like it's flying through. And the top or the bottom doesn't matter anymore, which really is what you're trying to get done, is the stuff you can get done at the time you're doing it. But man, I kept picturing that. And I liked it. It's a good, thought others might as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is very universal. You know, people like, everyone's in a different situation. There's some people who are right in the middle of something really great, you know, and they're like looking ahead and looking in the past. And, you know, they can learn from this as well. Like, focus on what you're doing right now. Take advantage of that, because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. You know, and then people who are in really shitty situations where they might need to think about, like, you know, what's in the future for them, right? Because what's in the past, what things have already happened are already gone. There's nothing you can do about them, right? You don't have to worry about that. You just worry about what you're doing right now and then possibly what's to come.
Right. So, you can use it on either side. You can use it as I have to make the best of what I'm doing now. Or if it's terrible right now, this too shall pass. This is flying by.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it'll lessen the hurt, you know, depending on what it is or the pain of what it is left below you. But you can constantly work on changing it. So,
Yeah, I've had, I mean, two times in my life where that has really, like, been an important, like, kind of idea that I've thought about. One is when our brother Derek was in Iraq. You know, I kind of had that thought, like, I guess people would ask, people occasionally would be like, "Are you worried? Are you scared, you know, that your brother's going to die?" And I'd be like, "Well, of course, you know, of course I'm scared and worried." But my kind of thought process was that, you know, all of us can die at any moment, you know. Like, we could get hit by a car, we could get in an accident, we could have a heart attack, we could, you know, who knows? There's all sorts of different ways to die. Now, obviously, if you're at war, you're put in a situation where there are more variables that could, you know, end you. But I just felt like, as a believer, you know, like, we all have our time to go. And it's going to happen whether or not. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, like, obviously, you can try to mitigate those situations, but you know, I kind of had that thought, like, I can worry about it, but I could also think, well, if it's his time to go, it's his time to go. You know, he's doing something that we're proud of him for, and if it's his time, and if it's not, then he'll be here. If it's my time to go, I might die tomorrow, you know, like,
you do what you can to mitigate the issues that you can, you know, you wear a helmet,
right,
things like that,
exactly, right,
but you're not going to get overly worried about what can happen. Worrying just doesn't always help.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Worrying isn't going to help in that situation. And that was the same thing. So the other time is when my wife got breast cancer. And, you know, it was like, obviously I can worry about it. Like, the hardest part was not knowing. It was like not knowing what the possibilities were, not knowing what the treatments were. Once we started to know more things, it was like, okay, now we have, you know, a little bit more control, at least in our minds, over what's happening. You know, we really don't have any control, but you know, you had to just kind of sit back and be like, well, we're just going to go through the steps and do what we need to do. And hopefully everything's okay. But you know, like there in those situations, there's like the kind of, I guess, the fact that I could give up control let me worry less. Like there's nothing that I can do in this moment that's going to change what's happening. So what I can do is not worry about it and think about, you know, what we can do to work toward what, you know, what other possibilities there are, what other things to think about, you know?
Right.
So yeah, you got to only do what you can in the moment. You
know? That's right. So speaking of doing things, not in the, well, in the moment, but we just got done today, finally getting back to shooting.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Do we want to go into what we were opening? I guess so. I mean, that'll come out. Yeah.
Yeah. You so, So Brian House from the Housework on YouTube, and then the Work For It podcast, and his company Housemade Industrial reached out. He actually reached out to us back in 2020, and you know, we had started a relationship, kind of became friends, and then he sent us a Revolution 2x72 grinder, the Gen 1. So Brian reached out to me again recently and asked if I would be interested in the Gen 4 Revolution grinder. so he put together and sent Generation 4 Revolution with this really awesome, like, custom plaque on the side, number 3 that he's built with the plaque. And with a VFD and you know, speed control and the motor and everything. So he basically all the bells and whistles on what he does. He super generously put that together and sent that to us here. So I got it maybe a week and a half ago. And as soon as we got it, obviously Deb and I are both like, okay, well, this has got to be a video. You know, we have to like put it together, put it up. You know, what's the angle going to be? What can we do? How can we highlight Brian as best possible, you know, and like send people his way, because he's been super generous to us and our channel over the years. So we got together tonight and started filming that. So we're kind of unboxing it. This like nice big crate, you know, came in. So unboxing that and starting to put it all together. It's so cool. It's such a cool thing, man. I'm super excited. So that's what we've been working on.
Yeah. Getting that going.
Maybe I'll hold off on saying the other part of it, just because I know that I'll wait for the other part until something else. Another secret part. So yeah, I've been working on some stuff and, you know, stuff in the shop that, has other kind of secret stuff, but hold off on that until maybe next week. I'll see if I talk about it then. But yeah, no. So that's been really cool. It's really good to get that get back into filming and getting together. It's been a while, you know, since Maker Camp, since we were actually at Maker Camp and filming there.
Crazy.
That video should be coming out shortly. I know we keep saying that each week, but but you know, that's life is life, right? Can't control anything except for what's happening right now. So.
Right. So tomorrow we're gonna work on that sliver of time, and Dustin's going to come over. We'll do some voiceover, some different angles for these home videos from Maker Camp, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And figure out a way to best show them off. But I mean, we got footage of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And some really nice drone shots, and we didn't really, I think we discussed this, but we didn't really interview anyone. We just got trying to put out a general feel.
Right.
Maybe next year we'll decide to do a little bit more of a focused traditional video the way we would do it, maybe.
Right.
Have Dust do more stand-ups and maybe not interviews, but talking to people and get people mic'd up. But this one we just wanted to go and have a general feel. So we'll have that very soon. And just a lot of good looks at it. And yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm excited to see it all again. Like, I've seen a few different people's videos about Maker Camp, and I'm excited to have that one come out. I was thinking, like, Jimmy DiResta just put up a video, or, you know, 2 week and a half ago, about his barn, his pole barn, or not, I guess not pole barn, his timber frame barn that he just had put up at his place. And he and Taylor, his girlfriend, they like just did a, they talked together over it. So they just like recorded themselves talking over it while you were watching it. And that was kind of cool. So like, maybe we think about that. Maybe that's one of the things that we possibly consider is just you and I both talking about it, since it's like, you know, both of us there. I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that'd be kind of cool. Cause then we can like, as we're watching and talk and just talk about fun things or people or whatever, you know, reminisce as we're watching the video is playing, you know, the visuals, but that'll be cool too. I'm excited to do that and come up and hang out and do a little bit of audio stuff over that. That's like one of those things that we've never really done. We've never done like voiceovers at all. You know, it's always just because it's always filming on the spot and talking in the moment. You know, occasionally we're like, oh, we'll do something or like we'll do a voiceover, but only just like right after it happened. You know, like we'll do something and then I'll talk about it.
Yeah.
And then it over, you know, so.
Yeah, that's, I think that's the best way. I mean, unless you're by yourself doing, and I mean, a lot of people, that's all you can do. If I were by myself and I wanted to shoot a process, I would probably do the exact same thing. Right. Shoot it all, put it together in a timeline, and then just do a voiceover about what's going on. Oh, yeah, here I was doing this. That's a perfectly fine way to do it. But since we can do it another way, we do. We've never done it. And our, the voiceovers are you explaining something with something in the background, but why you were in the shop either. And the only way we've actually forced it was when you do something and you want to explain it more, or I ask you to explain it more, and just say, I'll be like, Dust, can you just talk about what you did there? And I'll shoot it and I'll lay it under.
Right.
And you say, yeah, okay. And then you'll just go over it again.
And I mean, so often we do things where I'm talking, but you know, I might be showing something. You're just showing my hands, and you'd put in all sorts of different shots in over me talking. So it's not like I'm always. It never feels like a voiceover. It always feels like it could just be part of a conversation that was happening, you know, that is caught in then with other like, you know, clips and stuff added in.
Because
you
do
that all the time anyway. There's always clips in among. It's rarely ever me just talking for a while about what I'm doing. You know, like,
yeah, no, I think that's a nice, it's, I like, yeah, I like that way of doing it.
Yeah, looks good. So, yeah, so I've been in this last month doing a kind of a bunch of little things in the shop. I've been doing some axe stuff, working on axes, and you guys have probably seen the two axes that I made, the double bit and the single bit, and the and all the sheath stuff for it. That leather that I got is from the stuff I got from Maker Camp.
It's I got footage of you buying it, I think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it was like an antique, I think it's antique bison hide, actually.
Yeah, I think I pointed that out to you.
Right.
I think. I was like, hey, Dust, look at this.
Yeah.
And you were like, cool. Oh, yeah, that's great. You're like right away, like, yeah, yep, I'll take some of that.
And it was so cheap, too. I mean, like, compared to other, and I've actually visited their website. I can't think of their name off the top of my head, but I'll have to look it up. But if I think about it, I'll put it in like the post for Instagram when I'm talking about this podcast. But their store is really inexpensive compared compared to Tandy, which is where I get all my leather from. You know, that's like, it's not super expensive, but it's not cheap. And you know, like, I think other companies, there are other companies that sell higher quality, more expensive leather. But this stuff was really good. I mean, I'm sure some of it was like they were at an event and selling it to people directly, so their prices were low. But, you know, I mean, I was getting decent pieces of leather that I could make, you know, six or seven axe masks, or, you know, five or six or seven sheath, you know, knife sheaths for like $25. You know, so like that's so it comes out to be just like a couple bucks a piece for each of these sheaths, you know, and it's like the cost of materials is so inexpensive. So
yeah, they had
a couple. It was nice.
They had really cool stuff. They had the they also had the football, the pigskin.
Yeah,
like leather market. Man, I should have just grabbed some.
I did think about that, like,
because that would have been such a funny, like, you know, just a great angle for a YouTube video.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Like making, and then I think I brought it up, like hey, what if football, it was like making something from a football? And then I think you were just like, well, why don't we just take a real football?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And cut it up and then make a sheath out of it or something. Yeah, that'd probably be cool. Yeah. You know, that's actually probably be much more expensive. If we want like a real leather, like Duke football,
yeah,
it's going to be like $80, $100.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I'm sure we could got there, we probably could have got it for like 10 or 15 or something. You know,
right.
Whatever it was selling it for. Yeah.
That's actually, yeah, I forgot about that. We should do that.
Yeah, I
just
know,
get buy a high quality project. Football and then make a sheath out of it or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, make something leather out of it. Make like a, I don't know, yeah, whatever. Something out of it.
I but also like, saw. Yeah,
I
saw.
$80 football and make a $7 wallet out of it.
Right.
Go the other way around.
Mm-hmm. I saw, and I think you liked it as well on Instagram. There's this company, I don't know who they are, but they're making. It's for your belt. It's like a belt loop thing that snaps on. You undo the leather, and then it folds out to be a waxed canvas bag.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I think, what's it, Beaver Craft, or what's the... There's a couple of different people that do similar type of things, if I can think of the guy's name.
Yeah, I feel like it was the one I saw was probably just a generic, like, you know, someone made a little video of it.
Right.
Like, oh, isn't this cool? I thought it was really, really cool, because it does. It folds up, so you unclip this, the leather clip, and then the bag kind of unrolls or unfolds. Then you have a bag you can collect things in or whatever. And then you fold it back up and snap it on your side.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
Maybe it was Badger Claw leather. He does a bunch of different stuff. He does leather, but he also does like the wax canvas bags and things. And I think I've seen him do that type of thing before. I feel like I saw, I forget who it was that I saw someone do that. Maybe it was, I mean, I know that, like, I've seen Wrangler Star use similar type of things on his bags, but it was Dave Canterbury or something, someone, you know, who's kind of like a bushcrafter. I don't think it was Joe Robinette, but some one of the videos I've seen people do that where they'll be like, you know, check this out. You, like, have it, because that's one of those things that is really cool that you can keep on your belt that mm-hmm. stays nice and tucked away, and then if you're, like, doing something like foraging or, you know, like, collecting tinder or something,
right.
just to be able to flip it
right.
open and fill it up and have a bag that's, you know, a liter size as opposed to
yeah.
just like your pocket, you know, but it fits away really nice. Yeah, that is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be cool with something like that too. I know, as soon as I saw it too, I was like, oh, that'd be cool. I could make that really easily.
Right. Make a switch.
Make your switch.
Ding, ding, ding,
yeah,
ding, ding.
Right. Ding, ding, ding. Oh man, I packaged up those two axes and sent them to their recipient. And in the box, I put a couple of our stickers. But the packaging was really interesting. Like, I kind of had all the axes, like, individually taped with cardboard straps down to hold them in place. And then in the middle of it, I did this little, like, pocket out of cardboard and tape. And I put the stickers in the pocket. So it's like, you know, you open up, it's this, like, nice presentation when you open the box up. So
very nice.
Yeah, it turned out cool. Yeah, but yeah. So I've been, you know, working on axes. I reached out to buy Daniel Donnelly from the Donnelly Brothers. What is this? It's Donnelly Brothers, but I can't. If that's something, Donnelly Brothers Metalworks on Instagram. Daniel reached out to me to see if I wanted to participate in a Secret Santa axe exchange with a bunch of other, like, Instagram axe guys. So I'll be doing that. So I just did, I did a couple live streams over the weekend. So I think some of these people that are listening were probably popped in and, did some stuff on Instagram, just Instagram live, and, just worked through the process of kind of cleaning up, taking that head and cleaning it up, you know, just wire wheeling it, grinding it, and things that I've done before on video. But I just kind of wanted to show people how quick it can be done if you're doing it in real time. You know, it doesn't take a ton of work to restore, you know, an old axe head. Obviously, there's all sorts of different ways people can do it, but what I like to do is just use the wire wheel to get all that surface rust off the surface, and then take it to the grinder and clean up any mushrooming, anything like that. And then obviously after that's grinding and reprofiling and all this stuff. But I was working on a True Temper Kelly Perfect Jersey axe, and it's a beautiful axe. But I'm really excited to be working on it for the recipient of that, the Secret Santa gift axe exchange, which it was kind of cool. Daniel's girlfriend reached out to everyone who's participating and gave us the people who we will be sending it to. So that way he would be able to be surprised as well. So pretty cool. But he put together like this list of kind of rules and stuff, you know, like the size it should be, the fact that it should be a vintage axe and not like a new axe. It should be, you know, a bunch of different things he put together. But was it one of the so he had the whole list together, and I was asking about a few different things, and you know, and he mentioned a couple like patterns that people shouldn't use, and I think it's more just because yeah, they're really common patterns that are still around. So the fact that like if you're gonna get a vintage axe head, you'd like to get one that's like not a super common contemporary axe pattern. So
can you do modifications or no?
I don't think so. No, it should, because okay. It's like it's a vintage axe head exchange basically. So it's like
Okay,
use a vintage axe head. You can either use, you know, handle. It can either be a vintage handle or a new handle. Either one's fine. He said that you could do leather on it if you want to do like a mask, but it's not. It's not required, because a lot of people who there are some of the axe restorers that don't do leather. Right. So like, it's not a requirement. Like if you want to do it, that's fine, but it's not a requirement. So, but yeah, it's kind of cool. It's interesting to, hear other people's perspective on what makes a reasonable, exchange vintage axe, you know, like, because in my perspective, like, everyone has a different perspective on what they like, right? Everyone's perspectives are their own perspective. So like, I am not a big fan of Michigan pattern axes, and that seems like it's kind of a consensus across the board for a lot of axe people. And that's one of the patterns that's still around. Like when you go to a store and you see an axe, they're almost always Michigan pattern now, which is the reason why that was one of the ones that was on the list of like, it shouldn't be a Michigan pattern, right? Because that's super, it's contemporary. Like you can go buy one. So, but I guess it was more just like, they're really common. And, but that being said, if someone really loves Michigan patterns, right, they might be really happy to get a Michigan pattern. And if it's like a Michigan, a really cool, like, you know, Collins, legitimate, you know, Michigan pattern from the 60s, right? That's completely different than a current, you know, like China, made in China head Michigan pattern. So,
yeah. And what a great time to be a Michigan pattern collector. Yeah. There's always that one thing or that one person who's super into that thing. No one else is like, yeah, I'll buy them all up. I'll take those.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, yes, in like 10 his, years, his, everyone's going to want my Michigan.
Like, for some reason, that's all his grandfather ever had, you know, so he's, like, in love with it. So he's just like, this is great. People throw these things away.
And that's the thing, too. It's like, it's not necessarily the pattern that's important. It's the context of what that head is from. You know, like I said, so, like, there are Michigan pattern Black Ravens, I think. Maybe, I don't know, I can't remember. But you know what I mean? Like, if there was a Black Raven, it doesn't matter what it is. It's a Black Raven. You know, it's like,
right.
Or, you know, if you get like a Plum Champion, or if you get a Collins Legitimus, like there's lots of different head styles, you know, or like I have a Michigan pattern axe. That's a Worth axe, Worth. And that's from Nicole's grandfather. Right. So it's like, doesn't matter that it's Michigan. It's more of the history of it. Like it's from someone that I know used it and has had it for a long time. So then obviously that Michigan pattern is important to me. But if I'm at a flea market and there's a table full of axe heads, and there's, you know, if there's a Michigan pattern there and it's more than like $5, I'm not going to buy it, because I have a bunch and it's not really my favorite pattern. Now, if it has a cool stamp on it, then I'll buy it, because then it's got something to it. But if it's a no name, you know, I'm not going to buy that. But if there's like a Dayton pattern or a Connecticut or, you know, like a Jersey or a Rockaway, anything like that, if those are no names, I'll buy them, because I like those patterns. Like they're interesting heads to me.
Right.
So I mentioned to Sean that I was going to use the Kelly Perfect Jersey to give away. And he was like, you're going to give away that head? He's like, isn't that like your favorite head? I was like, yeah, but that's the point of giving away something that's really cool, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm hoping that the person who has me is going to give me something that's really cool, right? Like something they would really want to have. So
they're going to give you coasters.
Only the best coasters.
Only the best gift exchange. You're going to get some coasters.
Yeah.
You know who you are, coaster people. All right. So we can continue with you, but I need to talk about a betrayal of what we've been discussing with the Maker Switch and trying to do stuff. And I'm if people know it or don't know it, I'm not as handy as Dustin is. I'm still the guy who makes the videos. I'm not necessarily the guy who makes all the things. Like, I could probably do most of the things now because I've watched Dustin do it 1,000 times.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Like blacksmithing, I was decent at certain parts of it just because I feel like I watched Dustin do it so many times.
Right.
It was still a little awkward, and some of the spots were not as good as they could have been, and there's a lot of work, but I've just seen it so many times. So.
Right.
But anyway, I've been looking and looking for a really big desk. So we have this room in the house, which it's our grandmother's old side, right, where she had the couch and the TV, on the front.
Yep.
And we've been trying to make it into an office, and I've been looking for a really big desk, either a really long one or a corner desk, where I could have all my stuff, editing station, and then we could also have my wife's stuff and a printer and the Cricut and a bunch of other stuff.
Right.
I just could not find it. I mean, for one, like, online, it's so hard to order big furniture like that, right?
Yeah.
So we went to a million stores, and we've been looking for a few pieces of furniture, couch and some desks, but there's just, I don't know what it is. There is such a lack of quality, simple, clean-looking desks.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know. And that's one of the things, like the Michigan pattern. Once you are looking for a certain thing, for some reason, you can't. I don't know. It's like we could not find it. How's it so hard? And that is why I eventually ended up back at IKEA. Because if you're looking for simple, clean-looking items,
right,
that is IKEA.
Yep.
Everything looks nice and clean. And everything looks good at IKEA.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily quality. It is what it is. It's flat pack, and a lot of it's hollow. You know, it is what it is. But
yeah, right. Or press board. Or, yeah, right.
You walk through IKEA, and their little home, like the little displays, look great. Like their kitchens and living rooms look awesome.
Because it's European, that Swedish aesthetic, is that like clean, you know, not a ton of ornamentation, but like really clean, really nice angles, nice lines, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's
so much fun,
right? It's cool to go in and then everything's so anyway. So I was like, I just need a really long desk, and I basically figured I could, you know, a lot of these things are, you can get these pieces and put these pieces on top, and
yep.
So that's what we end. Yeah, that's what we ended up doing, was getting a bunch of cabinet things. One of them I didn't even put the drawers in. I took everything out, even the metal brackets for where the drawers go.
Right, yeah.
And I put the computer in that one. And then another one is on. And so basically, we made two desks into one, kind of. Okay. And so it's just one giant desk, but with a lot of storage under it. And they actually just started this new top, which is bamboo instead of their normal, which is like rectangular stuff.
Right, yeah.
And I think it's real. It feels real. And it feels like I stood on top of the desk and it was solid. So.
There you go.
You know, I finally gave in, and I was just like looking online, looking everywhere I could, and then finally I gave up, just went to IKEA and built my own, and went there and picked it up at the warehouse, because another great thing is they have the warehouse there. You don't have to wait 6 months for a desk.
Yeah, right.
I was like, fine, I'm doing it. And, you know, 4 days later and a lot of cursing, I had them built. And
well, yeah, and, I mean, but that... So that also, I mean, like you said, it's not quite a betrayal because, you know, obviously you went to IKEA and bought something that would work, but then you like modified it and customized it to make it work for you.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. And I did have to, I just drilled some 1-inch holes out the back to let the computer breathe. I was going to cut a whole section, but I didn't have the right tools yet. So I just,
you're like, yeah, this'll work.
drilled a bunch of holes in the back and kind of made it work. But it's nice now. We got the whole thing spread out here. It's about probably 10 feet long.
Nice.
And right a nice on. Big long desk. Yeah.
Heck yeah. Nice. And would you pay for it, if you don't mind me asking?
I think it was around 400.
Okay.
Maybe 500. Right. But that's basically for two desks.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You got two.
They're each desks on their own, and they would have actually gone together a little better if I would have got the normal rectangle ones, because everything slides real tight together.
Right.
But the bamboo one was a lot more expensive, but it felt a lot like it's just better quality.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like the normal like 5 foot tabletop is like $25. Right, if you buy the bamboo, if you buy the bamboo version, I think it's $75.
Right. Yeah.
So there's definitely quality to it.
But. Yeah. Yes, I mean, like you could have went to like, I don't know, you could have went to Home Depot and bought a 4x8 foot sheet of plywood. And like, and then, you know, get some like veneer, and you could have put a veneer on it, and you would have to put like a front and sides on it, you know, like trim it out, and then either buy some legs or make some legs. Like there's, you know, by making something like that in a way that's reasonable and affordable, you're still looking at spending a couple hundred dollars to do it.
And for me personally, that's beyond my talent. I mean, yes, I could do the basics, but to make it look good
beyond
what I can do. And especially once it comes to, you know, cabinets and drawers and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, now we have 15 drawers.
Right.
under this thing. Yeah. And there's no, I can't do that.
Yeah. And drawer hardware, like slides and pulls and all that stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. so, I mean, that all adds up. Like you probably couldn't have, I mean, you could have built it for cheaper, but it wouldn't look as nice, you know? And if it's going to look equal or nicer, it would cost more to make it.
Yeah. And so. It's, also, we're near, people don't know, we live in Maryland, but just north of us is Lancaster, PA, and a lot of Amish, that type of thing. And they have all these stores where you can go and, like, get food and stuff, but you can also get furniture that's supposed to be made by them. So we went there to look, and you know, for one, it's going to be a lot of money, right? Because it's supposed to be, it's handmade stuff.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be quality, but I've seen some stuff, and some stuff looks kind of handmade and looks really good, but some also just looks like they also have factory style stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
That has no personality. That just looks like any other thing that could be an office building.
Right.
You know, like why would I pay $5,000 for this desk when it just looks like any other factory made? If it looks like maybe you got to see a little bit of the hand of the maker.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, like no, I agree.
You know, some of that stuff they made, it's just, you know, whatever factory ran by who knows what Amish guy. But I want to see, you know, it's the romantic thing of thinking that some guy's in a barn making it from start to finish that you're probably paying for.
Right.
But that probably doesn't happen, or at least at that level.
That's that, like, the whole debate of how clean do you make something? You know, like, how perfect do you make it before it then loses its personality, right? It loses its handmade quality. So like now if you make something perfect, but you can see all the like dovetails and the joinery, and you can see like then you can see the work that went into it. But if you make something super clean and you can't see any of the work,
and
if you made it, like, where's the evidence of the hand? You
know, right. And so much of the stuff at the place we're at was heavily painted.
Right.
Where you could not see any of that. It would just looked like something you'd see in an office building, and it just wasn't.
Right.
I was like, we're not gonna spend money on this.
Yeah. No. I don't know. You should have I mean, I guess your other option, if you wanted like a big tabletop too, would be to do something like a live edge, you know, like get a big slab of wood.
Right. And we thought about that too.
But then it's also, again, it's a desk, right? So it's not like a dining room table that's a centerpiece. It's Like, I mean, you're at it. You're going to be working. You like, you know, you might not appreciate it the same way that you would if like something that's more of a centerpiece, like in your living room.
Right. I'll say if we ever decide to do the timber frame like office.
Right. Yeah.
Then I would want a nice centerpiece, big custom made desk in the middle. You know what I mean? Something like that. You could almost, it doesn't have to be live edge, but where you can see it, where it looks nice, and where it may, you know, it could be bent steel legs or something like that. Something really cool that you'd be proud of. But our desk is in our little office here, it is what it is.
Right. Yeah. Well, when you're ready to make that desk, you let me know. We'll make it together.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the biggest piece of furniture I've made is our dining room table. And I made, you know, that's just old barn wood, you know, cleaned up, but a lot of the milling marks and stuff still on it. The big, like, cross cut or circular saw, big circular, you know, mill saws and stuff, lines still, some things on it, but like all just, and, you know, cleaned up and put together with, I guess I used dowels to hold everything together, and then breadboard ends, and then just a basic apron around the top with four legs that are tapering. So not like super complex, but, you know, it is, when I think about that size of something, it does take time and effort. Like that took me a decent amount of time and, you know, and a good amount of effort to make something like that. So
yeah,
that goes into like, yeah, maybe I save some money by making it, but, you know, like, what's my time worth, too? You got to think about that. So, obviously, as a maker, some of that doesn't matter, right? My time is the enjoyment of making, right? So, it's not, I don't think of my time as a cost when I'm making stuff for myself. You know, when it goes into making things for other people, then you got to think about time as cost, you know, because time is money.
But time is money, yeah.
I like that. Have you seen recently I've seen on Instagram these little reels where people are making stuff and then it has this like cute kind of like bouncy song that goes, it costs that much because it costs that much because it takes me fucking hours. And it's like, it costs that much because I don't have superpowers. And it like goes on, and it's this kind of like bouncy song, but it's like, it's all these people like doing something that, you know, it's like, this is the reason why it costs so much, because it takes me forever to make it. You know, like,
right.
So if you want something handmade, you're going to have to pay for it because it takes.
Right. That's the thing. I would rather reach out to some of the people we've met and I know that then you're okay. Then you feel okay with spending that much.
Right. Yeah.
And you know where it's coming from and there's that personal connection, but, you know, it's hard to find that balance.
Yeah. Well, you know, there'll be more things to make in your life.
Oh yeah.
How's your shop coming along at all? Have you done anything inside the shop space? You have like moved your stuff out there from your back porch?
No. It's still in the back porch, all the stuff. I know. Okay. There's a million things to do. I told you the other week where I got excited about the other shop, the enclosed one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And made a little theater.
Yeah.
So I jumped on that.
Of course you did. The temperature-controlled shed.
Oh, yeah, baby. So that's got the whole wall. One wall's a screen. We got the couch out there. I got a rug. I bought a new sound bar for it. That thing, man, it's great.
That's awesome. I like how you have there. Like your theater, your projection theaters now is like inside, like a whole, it's just a whole room building just for that. It's great.
Yeah. So that set up, everything else is waiting to be, but yeah, I got to move all that stuff and
yeah.
So much to do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, now that, go ahead.
I guess this will be an early recommendation, but I got another one for you. I don't know if we talked about it, but Peter Jackson is doing the documentary series Get Back about the Beatles making, is it Let It Be or Abbey Road? Abbey Road? No, Let It Be. Sorry.
Okay.
So there was an original film made, which you can't really find, or you got to get DVDs of it, of them making the album. And the original idea was they'd have cameras everywhere. I think it was like a McCartney idea. And you can see us like the Beatles making music. But the little movie that came out was okay, but it was just, there was so much more footage. Apparently there's 54 hours of footage of the Beatles.
Right.
Making these songs. And so, I think Apple, the recording company that the Beatles made, they contacted Peter Jackson, the director of The Lord of the Rings and other things, about, like, they were talking about VR or something. They wanted to talk to him, and then he just kind of brought it up, like, hey, do you guys ever plan to do anything with all that footage? Because Peter Jackson's a huge, huge, like, a super mega Beatles fan.
Nice.
And they're like, I don't know, you can come look at it. So I think he spent the next many months going through all this footage.
Yeah.
And then he started using kind of these cleaning techniques of cleaning up the audio and the film to a degree. Well, so we'll see how it turns out. But there's so much modern technology now where you can take audio and filter out certain things. So if there was crappy audio you couldn't use before of them all talking over each other, he can isolate people now.
Right. Yeah.
As if you have a multi-channel track of all these recordings. So even if they're just chatting, but like George and Paul are talking about something, if he just wants to pull one out, he can. So not only does he have 50-some hours of footage, he has ways to manipulate it. So originally they were going to do one big film called Get Back, you know, the song from one of the songs from the album. And then it kind of, you know, pandemic hit. So now they're doing a 3-part series. So the first two,
nice.
And they're each 2 hours. So the first two are the whole building, them all doing it. And the third one, I think, is supposed to be the concert on top of the roof of Abbey Road in its entirety.
Nice.
You know, the one where you see them all up top, you know, and uh-huh. So that's happening. And I think I'll do, sorry, I can't invite everyone on the podcast, but I can invite Dustin. What I'm going to do is have everyone over to watch the last one. If you guys want, or maybe I'll run them all on one day. I don't know if you can't get your hands on watching the others, but at least we'll have the last one in the Shed Theater, crank it up, just have a good time and watch the last one. So I'm excited about that.
That's awesome. When are they coming out?
I think it's right after Thanksgiving. So it's like the 3 days. I don't know if it starts on Thanksgiving night, but it's like 3 days in a row.
Oh, so they're all coming out right in a row. All right. Mm-hmm. Nice. Because I was thinking, as you're talking about, it was going to be like, you know, one soon and then one, like, you know, if they're ready, like maybe one in the winter and one in the spring. Because then, like, by next spring and summer, you can move that, move your projection outside.
I know. And that was actually the original thought. I had talked to some friends of mine about that too. Like, hey, I would love to do an outside movie night because that's what it's built for.
Right.
Our projector that we did the thing for. And, but then they kept pushing it back. And then they made a 3-part series. So now it's going to be inside where it's warm.
Yeah. Nice.
But, that'd be sweet. Yeah. Oh, wait. Okay. It's Disney Plus November 25th, 26th, and 27th.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Have you seen any previews of the new Matrix?
No, I didn't. I saw that it was there. I just didn't. And didn't bother to.
I kind of watched one partially, but you've like tainted me for previews now. That when I like start looking at a preview, I'm like, wait, I can't watch. If I want to see this, you know, if it's something I'm interested in, like I love the Matrix movies. They're just like what a fun concept to think about, you know. So like to have another one coming out, I'm excited for it. So I like,
started watching. Don't watch. It, and I was like, don't watch trailers, much. People.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's always that thing. I mean, not only with big action movies and big movies you're into, they overshow, they overshare, because a lot of times the directors and the filmmakers don't have any control over what's shown.
Right. Yeah.
So you watch modern trailers. It's ridiculous how much they give away. So many plot points. And you're like, well, what's the point of even going? I'm going to sit here. Oh, yeah, here she comes. She's going to bust in soon. So I'm not invested. Okay, here she comes. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like when it's like the old days when they would do comedies and they play all the best jokes, and you get kind of this laughter in the theater that people. Right. Oh, yeah, I know that one, but it didn't hit as much as if you would have heard it for the first time.
Right. Yeah.
So see it, get a sense of it, and if you already know, like, you like the filmmaker, or you like this, just stop.
Right. Yeah.
Turn it off. Say, look, I'm going to see it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. Nicole and I went and saw Dune in the theater. It was just really cool. It was fun to see that in the theater. We went in and we, you know, now when you're buying tickets during pandemic, you, like, now that the theaters are back open, they, you do it, you, like, actually buy your ticket, and then you have a certain seat, you know, seating areas. And I'm assuming they do that way the theaters don't get too full, right? They can leave space in between.
That's how it's been for a while, I think it does.
What do you mean, like, pre-pandemic?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Like the big theaters, like, well, in Towson and White Marsh?
Yeah, the seats?
Yeah.
Huh, yeah. Okay. Well, this is the first time that it's been that way for us. So we were like, okay, we got our seats. We chose what we wanted, which was like halfway back through the theater and right in the middle.
Yeah.
So we get there, and we're there probably like 20 minutes early or so, maybe a little bit more. We grab our popcorn, because I always get popcorn and soda when I go to the movies. And we go and sit down, and we're the first two there. So we're like, okay, cool. Yeah, these are our seats, whatever. We'll sit down. We're good to go. So we're there for a little bit, and then this, like, maybe like 5 minutes later, an older couple comes in, and they, like, come in and they walk up, you know, almost all the way to the back of the theater, and they go sit down. I'm like, okay, the movie's gonna start in like 10 minutes, and it's just like the four of us there, and then this like three guys come in who are a little bit older, and they, like, kind of walk in, and they start walking up behind us, and I'm like, it's a little tight in here. Hopefully you guys can find seating. And they're like, yeah, we know. So they go in and they sit down. They're all like chatting. And that's it. That was like the entire theater. It was just us seven. It's like,
I thought you were going to say there was a rush of people. Like,
all at the last second. Like,
now I'll say, I do not like that type. That's been going on for a while in the big ones that I've gone to, where they make you choose your seats ahead of time, and it's such a pain because the way I felt it, for one, you don't always know the theater.
Right.
And even if you go to a certain movieplex, megaplex, you don't know which theater they're going to put you in. So when you choose your seats on that stupid screen, you don't know where they are. So you take a guess. I mean, you can take a good guess, like, yeah, in the middle, and it's fine.
Right, yeah.
But I've gotten there where you think you're, like, maybe too close or too far, when it's totally the opposite.
Right.
Like, oh, wow, the screen's way farther away than I thought it would be.
Right, yeah.
Like, in the picture, it was right up on you. And the good thing in the old days, when you could just go in, it's whoever wanted it more would get the best seats.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so I have to come in. I am super excited. I'm super excited about a movie, but I didn't, for whatever reason, I didn't pre-buy them, like, two days ago.
Yeah.
So I have to come in and get crappy seats and sit there while no one's there until the last 10 minutes. Everyone comes rushing in.
Right, exactly.
Like, they didn't care. Yeah. They don't care about the seats. I was here. It should be, if you want to come and get a good seat, you just come early, like it's always been. Get in line or go a half an hour early and you can get a good spot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think for, like, social distancing, you know, reasons, like, it makes sense to do seating now. Because, like I said, I think that obviously makes sense. Like, they want to make sure they have just space in between each, you know, group or whatever it is. But I agree completely. It's like,
they were, yeah.
If nothing else, I mean, definitely, like you said, going into a theater and being, like, assessing the situation in the theater and then choosing your seats, you know, is a big thing, right? Because sometimes you got, like, the big section in the middle where there's an aisle, and then you have to, like, you know, that might be, like, 10 feet further back than you think, right? Rather than, like, being in the last aisle of the first section, right? You know, so that way you know you're in the middle of the theater and you're in the middle forward to back. You feel like you got the best seat where the screen is taking up your entire view when you're sitting, right? That's the thing. So, but Dune was really cool. It was cool to see it in theaters, like, just that, like, that landscape and, you know, the breadth of what they were showing was really cool. So it was fun to watch that in a theater. Man, it was really cool. And I had heard from a few different people that it was like two parts, you know, part one, part two. So I didn't have that like that disappointment when it got close to the end and it wasn't done. Like, I heard a lot of other people say, they're like, wait, what? Can't wrap this up in the next 10 minutes. What's going on? Wait, this is probably part one, you know? So, but I actually think it worked really well for that. Like, I don't mind parts. so much, but I definitely think I've never read and I haven't watched the first Dune, but from what I know, it's a pretty like in-depth look into this, like these different, you know, worlds and families and their like the intrigue and the drama between them, right? There's a lot of that political build in the books that was really important to like the pace of the books that I think they did a good job of showing that and building that up in the movie. And I think if they tried to do the whole movie in like a 2-hour movie, you wouldn't have that same investment in the different families, right? You wouldn't have known about them. So I think for that part of it, it was good that they spent as much time as they did really building that up and getting you invested in these different families.
Yeah. I really feel now the amount of money they're putting into shows and runs like that, if it were up to me, I wouldn't want any beloved books or series to be made into movies anymore.
Right.
I don't want to see anything made into a 2.5-3 hour movie that is over 100 pages.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's so much material there, and it's so much easier to make a big budget TV show.
Right.
And to make it look quality, right? I mean, it's not easier, but people are dumping money into it. I mean, they're making a Lord of the Rings show. There's Game of Thrones that looked just as good as in the movie, like towards the end. Like, so why not? Like, if they were ever to, like, I mean, they could remake, you could do something like Harry Potter.
Right.
And you could do a season each year.
Yeah.
You could do 10 episodes on any of those books and it would be awesome.
Yep.
Or Narnia or something. You know, any of these fantasy books, any of these series books, you could make a whole series, and why not? Because you'll get your money back. It'll be a huge show.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And, like, Game of Thrones is a good example of that, because that was kind of, maybe not the first one, but that was one of the first ones that really did that, that made each season was an entire book, right? So that's, like, 10 episodes.
10 episodes, 10 hours of stuff. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And even that, you know, you're still losing stuff, but at least that makes a lot more sense, right? You can really dive into investing in these people. Anytime you have a series of books or, like, a really good book, you know, like, the reason why it's so good is because you can spend that amount of time investing in the characters, and then you love the characters.
So right. And the reason it's so, the reason it rarely works is because all that time is gone. All the investment that you put days and days reading a book or a month or whatever is not there in a movie. Right. Unless you know the background of the characters. Right. But if you're doing a TV show and you spend time with it and it comes out over separate weeks and you really get to sit in and live in with the characters. And that's where everything should go. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Like you said, there's no reason why they shouldn't do that now. You know, you know, because these other shows have shown that they're going to just make a ton of money. Like, you're going to make your money back.
You're going to make so much money.
I guess, when you're writing a screenplay based off a book, you have to be, there's like a certain talent there to be able to put in the right stuff. But,
I mean, there's ways you can definitely mess up all those things, but at least you can give a good shot at it. If it's a lot of content there, it's there ready to be made. So,
you say they're doing a Lord of the Rings series?
Yeah. Yep. Early. Really? Like way, it's supposed to take place like whatever, 1,000 years before the series of events in Lord of the Rings or a certain amount of time. So.
Oh, cool.
So basically, they have free reign to pick and choose whatever little background stories they want.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
just set it in the Middle Earth.
Middle Earth, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, there.
And that's the thing. There's tons of stories, like in the Silmarillion and everything. There's tons of stories of all these different, all the history of all the different races of men and elves and orcs and bad people and stuff. And yeah, it's cool. Yeah. And there's like that's cool too. There's a lot of the backstory in that in the Lord of the Rings that if you don't know it, it's fine. But if you do know it, like you said, it gives you so much more perspective on the stories and why these people are doing what they're doing or who they are, where they've come from. You know, the fact that like Sauron and Gandalf are like similar beings, right? They're both like Maiar or something, right? They're both these god beings from
right.
Eternal. You know, so it's like, but if you never know, you just know there's like a bad guy and a good guy, you know, like, but like how they got to where they are. I'm always kind of interested in that too. Like, how did the bad guy get where he is? Why is he the way he is?
You know, right. So.
Which is why I think the like Harry Potter with Voldemort, like that's really cool. Like that gives you a cool way to like look through that. Like you learn why he become what he did, or at least like, you know, you see the story of how he became what he did.
Yeah. It was on TV. I forget where we were, but anyway, it was on TV and my wife and I were, it was just in the background. We were watching it, the first one. Right. And then that one ended. And then usually these TV runs like TBS or whoever does these like weekends of movies, they'll right. run it. And they just rolled the same one in again. Same like, start. We're like, what? Are you just going to roll the first movie back to back?
Yeah, there are. You do realize there are like 8 movies, right? Like, come on.
We're like, oh,
I'm
man.
Ready for number
like,
2.
Yeah, there's like Privet Drive and like Dumbledore. We're like, what? No. This is the first one again. Yeah, get it. McGonagall's a cat. I know.
I want to know the next part of the story again.
Here comes Hagrid. I get it.
Yeah. That's one of those American traditions that we all love, the running of the same movie over and over again during holiday seasons.
That's
like my favorite Christmas movie, The Christmas Story. Oh, so good.
Yes.
Yeah, you know that one's gonna play like 100 times over the holiday break. It's like, all right.
I love
it. Catch little snippets of it.
Yeah, Christmas night. I like watching. And
yeah,
before we wrap this up, what are your I got one more question for you. So what are your favorite Christmas movies now that you've said The Christmas Story? That's probably my top one as well.
We're going to talk about Christmas movies? It's not even Thanksgiving yet.
Well,
oh, whatever. Okay.
Just quick.
All right. quick. So my favorite Christmas movies other than A Christmas Story. Let's see. I like It's a Wonderful Life, of course. That one's awesome. Like one of the best movies of all time.
Yeah.
Other Christmas movies that I like. That's like the one that I always watch. I'm trying to think of other ones that are on. I mean, there's like, I love, like Elf is really good with Will Ferrell. That one's super good. I love How the Grinch Stole Christmas, like the original cartoon version.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That counts.
That's super good.
That's a good one. Hey, no, we don't have to go too in depth. We'll save that for Christmas episode. Yeah. I like White Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Bing Crosby and all the, you know, that's the best, like, musical Christmas one. But anyway, what was the other? What was I going to say? Oh, real quick. Oh, okay. 3 Tom Hanks movies other than Forrest Gump. Hmm.
3 Tom Hanks movies that are my favorite.
Yeah.
Let's see. I love A League of Their Own.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Castaway.
Yeah.
Really good. Oh, that's another Christmas movie. Polar Express. That's him in that. You know, as the voice of the conductor.
Yeah,
that's good.
Well, also Castaway is a little bit of. Don't they? He's like leaving at Christmas. So I guess that could count.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, yes. It's a crazy one. Third Tom Hanks movie. Oh man, I don't know. Big.
Big's good, yeah. I hear Big a lot.
Yeah.
Mine's Castaway.
Yeah.
For sure. Saving Private Ryan.
Oh yeah. Oh man, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a big one. It's hard to go against that one. And if we're doing like animated, I think I'd pick Polar Express is nice, but like you gotta go with like Toy Story.
Right.
You know, his voice, maybe that would count. Those would probably be mine.
Yeah, okay. All right, I like that.
Yeah. Because I was listening to the Bill Sims podcast, and he had Tom Hanks on, and he asked, because he had been asking people that question, and he asked Tom Hanks, and they kind of went, well, you know, it's he based it off of like his best memories of the shooting of the movies,
right? Yeah,
and those were his favorite, because whatever, he likes them all, or he invests a lot in each one,
right?
And Castaway was one of the ones he really liked, but it's because he was like in Hawaii with his family, and I think he said his thing was every day he would, for some reason, he said he'd get in a Speedo and he'd swim out to one of the boats, and then would take him to like this part of the island. They would shoot all day, and he would come back and he would swim into shore and have dinner with his family and talk, you know, about what his kids did during the day, and they had adventures, and he said it was just like the best experience.
That's awesome. Get in the Speedo and swim out to the boat.
Swim out to the boat and then go shoot all day, and then once it got dark, go home. Swim back in.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And what just a cool movie, you know, like a, I don't know. Well, just such a good movie, you know, watching someone.
Yeah, that's another suggestion. If you want to, hearing Tom Hanks, he's so funny, but he's so good at telling stories about, like, what Robert Zemeckis is talking, like, you know, if we had any balls, we would just shoot in two halves. You know, we would shoot you fat and then take off and then shoot you skinny and shoot the two halves of the movie. That's how we should do it. That's just how they did it.
Nice.
And he went out, like, you know, Tom Hanks went off to shoot something else for a year and then lost all the weight and then did the second half of the film.
That's crazy.
Where he's super skinny.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Because he starts out as just a kind of a chunky guy, you know, normal dude.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then you see, like, the time lapse, and then you see him throw that spear and get that fish.
I know, I love
and
that.
He's standing up on that rock, but he's, like, super slim. You're like, damn.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like 10 yards away. He threw the spear and gets the fish. I'm like, that's so unrealistic.
But you almost kind of buy it because the physical transformation.
Yeah.
It almost sells it. If he was a chunky dude on that rock.
Yeah, right.
You'd be like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, but no. you see such a change that, well, shit, maybe he could.
Yeah, right. He's really been there for 80 days. That's awesome.
Right.
Yeah, that's such a cool part. I love that scene because what's the scene right before that, right before he throws the spear? It's like, is it when he does the thing with his, like, his tooth?
I think it's the tooth. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Where he's got to, like, where he does the tooth out.
The blade with the tooth and puts it in and screams.
Like, yeah, it does the rock to bust it out of his face. Oh. And it just, he goes black, and then the next scene is like, burn, the spear, and it's, you know, however long later.
Yeah. And apparently that was Tom Hanks' idea for the whole movie. It was just his idea, kind of. Because he had heard that every night there's a plane that flies to Australia. Every single night there's like a FedEx UPS plane that flies to Australia. And he's thinking, like, well, there's got to be a crew, like six people. And his thing, well, you know, what if one goes down? What happens? Yeah. And that's where it all started.
That's cool. Nice. I like that. Yeah, good stuff.
All right. Well, I don't know how this turned into a movie podcast, but here we are.
Here we are talking about movies. Well, on that note, I'll do a recommendation, not about movies.
All right.
So my recommendation this week is Sugar Shack Forge. The guy who runs Sugar Shack Forge is Ethan Goss, or Goss, G-O-S-S. And specifically, the reason why I'm recommending him is because he just recently, within the last month or so, put out a new racer. He's working on a racing axe. So his kind of idea is, like, when he was in college, he was in the timber sports, you know, did timber sports stuff, and he always had this idea of making his own racing axe. He like grinds.
Can you get a scholarship for that?
I think so. Yeah.
Timber sports, really? You have to go to, like, University of Alaska.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, I mean, they're definitely, because, like, at, you know, in college they have the timber sports teams, right? And they're like sponsored and stuff, you know, by that college, so. Yeah.
All right.
So Yeah, so he was in the timber sports, whatever, in college, and he always wanted to make his own racing act. So recently he had another company, like, worked in another company with the specs and stuff, and they were making some racing acts for him. And they're just super, super sweet looking. I think he's been doing some of his own grinding stuff on them when they come to him. So it's like, you know, the company's making basically the main shape for him, and then he's putting the edge on it. But they're just really, really beautiful. And they're only 3.5 pounds, which is small for a racing axe, I would think. I mean, yeah. It's got, like, a really wide edge, like racing axes do, and then the grind angle is super thin on them because, you know, the idea is that they bite in really deeply. They're not necessarily meant to be really robust, tough edge. You know, it's meant to be a really sharp edge because it has to cut really fast. So usually you have a heavier axe. I would think they're usually like 4 or 5 pounds, but this is only 3.5 pounds, which is the typical weight of a single bit axe. So super cool. I'm really jealous. Ever since I saw a racing axe and just like that super wide bit, that's super sharp, I'm like, ooh, that looks so cool as an axe guy. So if you guys are interested in axes at all, especially if you ever watched any of the timber sports stuff and you're watching how people are doing, like, the racing, chopping through logs and stuff with axes, you should go check out Ethan's work, Sugar Shack Forge. So at Sugar Shack Forge, all one word, on Instagram. Check him out. Does some really beautiful knives too. Lots of hand forged stuff, little like cool Puko everyday user type things and outdoor knives. Some culinary knives, but most of it's like EDC and outdoor bushcrafting knives. Really nice stuff.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine. Okay. Not a normal one again. Like, like usually, but yeah, bamboo tabletop from IKEA.
$75.
I guess you could call it a life hack, but it's something I heard a lot. I don't think we've discussed it on this podcast, but something I heard about when it was like NPR or something. There was some story on the radio, and a guy had heard from someone else that if you want a discount on something, you can ask for a good guy discount. Did I talk about this?
I don't think so, but I feel like I've heard this before. But I don't think we've talked about it. I don't know.
So his idea was every store he went into, every purchase for a month, he would come in and buy whatever, or he'd bring it up, or if it was online, he would go to checkout and get some, but he would say, hey, can I get a good guy discount? And people would kind of go, what? It throws them off. But just enough where they go, what do you mean? And I think all he would elaborate is like, yeah, you know, I'm a good guy. I do good things, right? I'm nice to you. You have any, can I get a good guy discount? And he said that after a month, about 20% of the time it worked. People would give him a discount just because he asked for it. I think that's probably the main thing. If people outright ask you, and most places do have some type of discount they can give, whether it's an employee discount or some type of code or some coupon that they have, right? Like in retail or at any place, there's always something that can be given. And usually, I think my theory is because they give this stuff away usually when people complain.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like whatever, just shut them up, say, hey, we're sorry. We want to give you this, use this.
Right.
You gotta, so when you hear the opposite and you throw someone for a little bit of a loop and you're really nice to them, half the people don't care. Like, yeah, sure. Sure, you know, okay, I'll give you. And they give you whatever, 10% off. So I've done that for about 10 years. Not like I don't go into stores and ask for it. But if I'm online and I'm talking to some type of customer service person, I do it. Or if I'm on the phone, I ask for it.
Right.
And I'll say it's probably worked for me 50% of the time, not 20.
Huh. Nice.
I just recently, we talked about this, I bought a tractor, riding mower.
Yep.
And I was talking to customer service at Home Depot. And then one lady wasn't very helpful at all. So sometimes you have to ask multiple people, but right. she just wasn't helping at all. I was asking about assembly and stuff. Like, hey, if I get it delivered here, I get assembly. What if I get it delivered to the store? Will they assemble it? Or will it just be in a crate that I have to load in my truck somehow, you know?
Right.
She had no clue. And then, so she wasn't helpful. So I kept asking her questions. She didn't know. So I stopped with her, and then I got someone else on. And then this person was really helpful. And, you know, she was being great. So then at the end, I was like, well, do you have a good guy discount? And then all she responded was, are you buying it in-store or online? I said, online. She said, yeah, we can do a one-time courtesy $50 discount.
Nice.
$50 just because I asked for a good guy discount.
He's a good guy discount.
Because I think, like I said, my theory is a lot of times they have those because it's people who curse and yell and are like right. constantly yeah, hounding them over. Yeah. And they just want to get them off the line. Like, hey, I'm right. sorry for your inconvenience. You know, we'll do this one-time courtesy. It's like Amazon, same type of thing. They'll, right. they'll give you a lot of free stuff.
Yeah.
But if you just ask for it and you've been kind to them the whole time, then they might give it to you. So $50 off the tractor just because I asked. So.
And you actually said, like, good guy discount?
I said, do you give... what was my exact words? Yeah, it was something to the degree of, would I be able to get a good guy discount? That's all I said. Use those words because it throws them.
Right.
You know, can I get a good guy discount? And if they go on and ask, you say, well, I'm a good guy. You know, I'm nice. I do nice things. You know, can I get a discount? And then either they'll say no or they'll go. Most of them go. Yeah, sure. Here's 5% off, 10% yeah. off.
That's funny. I know, like, I'd feel weird about asking that. Like, but I guess that's the key point, is that it's not typical, right? Because I would be like, do you guys have, like, a courtesy discount? Like, that seems at least, like, something that's on their end rather than on your end. So you don't have to be like, you know, because I'm a good guy. It would be like, you know, just as a courtesy to the customer. Like, it feels weird to be, like, talking about yourself, you know?
But, right, right.
But like I said, I think maybe that is the key to it. It's the, like, it does throw them. They're like, huh?
It throws them a little bit. It's yeah. kind of funny.
Yeah.
It kind of breaks them from their, like, their, you know, their, right. their shell, their wall. Yeah. Like, yeah, all right. Sure, why not?
Okay. Right, yeah, exactly. Because if it's just, like, do you have a courtesy discount, they're like, no, and we don't.
It's,
you know,
it's super easy to do it online. That's where right. I do it most. You don't have to, like... get up the cojones to say it to someone in person.
Right, yeah.
But definitely, if you're working with Amazon or a big company and they have that little, like, hey, chat with the live agent now, do it every time.
Yeah. That's awesome. Hey, like you said, so you know, it's like you're saving money every time. If you've been doing it for 10 years and it works for you half of the time, you know, how much money you probably yeah. saved over the years.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Why not?
Why not? There you go. Little life hack from Devin. Recommendation, the good guy discount.
Good guy discount.
I like it. Cool. All right. Well, we are happy to be back this week. Sorry we missed out last week. Just, you know, busy life. Couldn't get around to do it in time. So we figured, you know, why try to force it when, you know, whatever. So, mm-hmm. but we're back. It's funny. I was doing a live stream and Jordan from JD Knives was in there and he was like, and he said he was kind of chatting and he was like, hey, what's going on? He was like, are you quitting? And I was like, nah, man, we're not quitting. Like, cause he had mentioned on the Instagram post that, like, you know, he'd have to find something else to listen to for the week or whatever. Cause we missed the podcast. And, oh, yeah. And I was like, I'm not quitting. And he goes, and you know, I kind of said it a little bit. I was like, nah, we're just, you know, we just missed the one, whatever. And, you know, we've been out of not doing a ton of stuff. We're both really busy. And then he put another, like, in all caps, he was like, quilting, you know, because it was like, because he had actually asked, am I quilting? Because I was doing the live stream while I was doing that canoe scene, you know, and I was like weaving it, and I was like, oh, quilting, no, not quilting. but yeah, it's good to know that there are people out there that want to hear us.
We're not fun. Quitting or quilting.
No, we're not. We're just living our life exactly at what's coming through the, what's it called?
At just small part of the hourglass.
Small part of the hourglass. Yeah, right. Living to the best of what we can do at this moment. So, but we really appreciate everybody listening and sticking in there with us. We will be getting the Maker Camp video out soon, and then we'll have the Revolution Grinder video out as well. We got some fun ideas for some videos coming up. We got one that's halfway done, so we'll get that in the works for y'all, and then a bunch of other things that are coming down the wayside. So make sure you're checking us out over on YouTube, on our name, The Art of Craftsmanship. Go over there if you're not subscribed, and if you're not watching our videos, go check them out and let us know what you think about them. Leave us a comment. It really makes a big difference. And you can also leave us a review on any of the podcasting platforms. I think specifically Apple Podcasts really does it. Like, you can put like stars and reviews on what you think, even if it's like a negative review. You can give us a review. Let us know what you thought about the podcast. And also, if anyone wants to hear anything or has any questions for us or anything like that, you guys can always reach out to us on Instagram, The Art of Craftsmanship, and also at The Art of Camera Guy. So you guys can send your questions there. If you have any questions for us or the podcast, we'd be happy to shout you out and answer some questions. So other than that, if you want to support us any other way, you can always go over to patreon.com/The Art of Craftsmanship and support us there. And for all of our patrons, we really, really appreciate it. So other than that, that's it. Thank you guys all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.